Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Samadhi maggo asamadhi kumago ti. Which I think some of you may know that quote from the suttas, which word of the Buddha, it says samadhi is the path, no samadhi is no path, or is a wrong path, or is a hopeless path, kumaga. And that's a central teaching of the Buddha. The path is a path of developing samadhi, this quietness, this peacefulness, this energy, this bliss of the mind. And the whole monastery is set up for that practice, not just samadhi for the sake of samadhi, but samadhi for the sake of what it will provide, for what benefits it will bring, for the power of insight which it generates. As the Buddha often said elsewhere, that it's as a result of samadhi that one sees things as they truly are. So for example, samadupanissa yathabhuta jnana dasanam. And so we've set up this monastery, we've set up this retreat, we've set up all the facilities to be focusing on this one thing. For the past 9 months, other than the February time when we held a quiet retreat, we've been gearing up for this 3 months range retreat. It's the best time of the year, where all the hard work of many people providing these facilities, generating the support so that we have enough food and requisites to look after ourselves. It's all pointing to this 3 months. And the way that we have arranged the schedule for these 3 months, it means that there isn't really many places where you can go and escape to in your mind. The escapes of the evening drinks, the escapes of newspapers, the escapes of radios or books have all been cut off. And the escape of chatter with your fellow monks has been cut off. And if you don't get into samadhi, you guys are going to go crazy in 3 months. So really it's up to you now. I do this on purpose. The only happiness which you can find in this monastery is a happiness based on samadhi, because all avenues are blocked now for you. And that's done on purpose, because I have enormous confidence in each one of you that you have got the sufficient supporting conditions to generate that samadhi, as long as you stop wasting your time doing other things. And so when there's nothing else to do but develop samadhi on the walking path, on the cushion, sitting, walking, it means that you are going to have to find a way, find a means for calming the mind down. There's nothing else to do in this monastery. And if you try and do something else, if you try and escape from the task at hand, you're just adding more suffering to yourself. So the only thing you can do here, if you want to have a sense of ease and happiness, if you want to have an enjoyable time in this monastery, is get down and sit a lot and walk a lot. At the very least, if you sit a lot and walk a lot, you're giving yourself the opportunity to develop peaceful states of mind. It doesn't matter sort of what state of mind you think you are in. After a while, if you sit a lot and walk a lot, just the defilements of the mind will just give in. You know, if you sit, walk, and your mind's all over the place, but you determine you're just going to carry on sitting, you're just going to carry on walking, you're just going to carry on sitting. even though the mind seems to be going crazy, you'll bust through that mind just through your perseverance. If you sleep a lot, talk a lot, read a lot, then you're going to get nowhere. And each one of you coming to this retreat has come here for a purpose. Now you really do want to generate beautiful states of mind, like I've been talking about all year. But you do have the inclination towards calming the mind and seeing the Dhamma. You all know what to expect from this monastery. It's not as if I'm surprising any one of you. You all know that this is what we do at this time of the year. So, having made that resolve to stay here for the rains retreat, and knowing the only thing which can make this rains retreat bearable, useful and fun is to develop your meditation, just make that your goal for this 3 months. Just to see if you can get as close as you possibly, as is possible, to develop those beautiful states of samadhi, which are there for the taking. Having made that resolution, made that your main goal, the main interest, the purpose for your being here, then many other things will fall into place. A person will develop deep meditation if they really want to. And I'm trying to encourage you to want that deep status of meditation. Once that inclination, that goal is there, and that's really what you want, it's only a matter of time and a matter of encouragement and a matter of instruction for you to gain those beautiful states of mind. In particular, with this path of samadhi, you have to get at least to that stage where you have full awareness of the breathing for long periods of time, so you can fill your mind up with the experience of the breath. So it's not wandering around in other places. And this at least you should be able to do for many hours of the day, to make the breath your friend. And of course there are many skillful means, and there are many dangers which I will point out both this evening and other evenings, which you should be very aware of. The skillful means for developing the full awareness of the breath is first of all having the inclination, the desire to do so. And the second one is like being methodical in your practice of meditation. Very often people want to try their own ways. They want to try the fast ways. They want to try shortcuts. But in my experience, the shortcuts are always the longest way round. What you think is the fast way is usually the slow way. Be very careful and very methodical with this practice, simply because what I call stages of meditation are no more than natural developments of the mind which is calming down. There's a sense that every person has to go through these stages whether they notice them or not. Of present moment awareness, silence, and then just partial awareness of the breath to the full awareness of the breath. Everyone has to do this because this is just a way of letting go of coarser things and then more fine things and then really fine things as you go in this path of quietness and stillness and inner contentment. And so spend a long time developing just present moment awareness. At least you're here right now with the cold, with the sound of the rain. You're here right now with the ache in your legs. You're here right now with the words which are being spoken. And you're not going off into fantasy land about the past or the future or anywhere else. You're developing just being in the present moment. It's a very simple thing in theory, but for those with very restless and untrained minds, it's extremely difficult. But like a person training in martial arts or training in music or learning an academic discipline leading to a degree, people are willing to give that commitment of time and energy to train themselves to get to those sorts of goals. And so I can't see why each one of you can't commit yourself to train and train and train to be present and to let go of this restless mind which creates so much turmoil and problem for you. Always going along fantasizing, dreaming, thinking of the future, thinking of the past. Just make a clear resolution for this range of people. You're not going to indulge in that. And the Buddha gave very clear and very beautiful instructions how to stop that wandering mind. Just comes to the mind about the Vitakasantana Sutta, which we talked about when we went to the New Norcia Monastery a few months ago. With the calming of the mind, with letting go of the past and the future, going to the present moment, the Buddha gave five very beautiful, skillful means of stopping such restlessness, such fantasy, such dreaming, such planning, such memorizing. He called it like the five, I think, by substitution, seeing the danger. The third was That's right, ignoring it. And the fourth one was calming it down slowly. And the fifth one was just using willpower. These are very beautiful, skillful means. Very wonderful instructions which actually work. Now if you are losing the meditation object of being in the present moment, if you're dreaming about some fantasy or if you're thinking about the future or the past, and just stop and just substitute that unwholesome Dhamma with what's happening now. Find something which will grab the attention in the present moment, whether it's the sound of the rain falling or going outside and just looking at the nature around you in the present moment or just walking and just feeling the cold. Whatever it is which brings you into the here and now, which makes you mindful, alert, aware, do that. And if that doesn't work, that substitution, perhaps, well, my favorite of all of these five methods is seeing the danger in what you're doing. Seeing the danger in just like fantasizing, it's just getting caught in that sensory realm. And if you die at that point, and you can die at any time, just where do you think you'll get reborn? How much time are you wasting? I remember Venal Tanisaro telling me the story when he was with Ajahn Phuong. They would meditate every evening for a couple of hours in the it was in the Chaitya, at the monastery where he spent many years. And some evenings meditating for 2 hours late at night, he was very tired and the mosquitoes were bothering him and it was hot and sweaty. And one evening, instead of like meditating on the breath, he got into a sexual fantasy. And he said it was easy to meditate for 2 hours. The time just went past very quickly. But when the bell went after 2 hours, he said that horror came to him because he knew that his teacher could read his mind. And he thought, I wonder what his teacher's going to say. And sure enough, his teacher, Lumpur Phuong, came right up to him and sort of looked at him, and he was expecting to be really scolded. And what his teacher said was so pertinent. He just said, you've just been wasting your time. And that sort of hit him very deeply, because if you just told him that he was a fool or he was an idiot, that wouldn't have meant as much. Because what was being said was to the point. Just wasting your time. You have 3 months here in this monastery to develop samadhi. If you waste your time, the samadhi won't grow. If you don't waste time, but put forth that careful effort onto the task, then of course this is a natural result of the path. these states of samadhi will come all by themselves. It's nature, it's happened to so many monks for thousands of years, and it's going to happen to you if you follow the path. If you waste your time, how much time can you waste? How many years, how many months, how many days have you got left when you can practice? So let that sense of urgency mean that you're not going to waste your time. The biggest danger is death, which comes at any time. That's the danger of wasting the opportunity. The other danger of wasting this opportunity is just the suffering which it brings. Just, you know, you're going to have to stay in your hut for days and days and days. You know that you're going to have to do a 2-week retreat. And during this monastery, during this rains retreat, no one can come off their retreat once they start it, until the 14 or 15 days are finished. Otherwise, and I'm not really interested in you staying in this monastery, basically. Sort of work through those problems, unless you get very, very sick, physically that is. Work through those problems. If you have any big problems, just come and talk with me, or come and talk with one of the other senior monks to help you through this or the difficult periods. But in particular, sort of if you practice this path properly, there won't be any difficult periods. So the danger of not training your mind when you have the opportunity is to living this monastic life with no happiness, living this monastic life with no wisdom, and having to eat the food of all these wonderful people who come and feed us, feeling a sense of shame. Now, what am I doing to deserve all of this? These are the dangers of not practicing. So regarding those dangers of the suffering which emerges if you don't sort of train the mind in just present moment awareness gives a great incentive. Okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to sort of be present. I'm not going to waste my time in past and future. I'm not going to waste my time in sleeping. I'm not going to waste my time in dreaming and fantasizing. There is a path, there's work to be done, I'm going to do it, and that's all there is to it. 4 o'clock I get up, and that's it. I get up at 4 o'clock. If I feel tired, I can go and have a sleep later on, but 4 o'clock I get up. End of story. That sort of clarity of mind, and that determination of mind, that willingness to do the training, is what will work. There's also the other danger from not doing this training is you're depriving yourself of the wonderful happinesses of the path. The person who trains in this path, who practices this path and doesn't give up and does it properly, they get these beautiful happinesses which come. The happinesses which are the fruits of this training. If you can learn how to quell the mind's inclination to go off into fantasies or past and future, you can quell that and stop that, and just start to learn to dwell in the present moment. It's amazing, just for that preliminary degree of meditation success, you get heaps and heaps of happiness. The payoff is enormous, considering just how simple, you know, that stage is. When you're present, you're free from so many difficulties, so many problems. You're right here, and you really wonder afterwards why you were just racing away off into the past and the future so much. You don't have to, no matter what problems, responsibilities, duties you have. None of you in this monastery has got as many responsibilities and duties as I have. I can lay them down. Why can't you? Forget about your trip after the rains retreat. Forget about even your trip tomorrow afternoon. Forget about what you're going to do even in the next hour. This moment is the important one. So hard to have the opportunity to let go of the past and future and get away with it in this world. Now is the time you can do that. Now is the time you should be doing that. So develop this sense of danger if you don't do this. you're going to have such a horrible rains retreat and you're going to have an awful life if you don't manage to get these samadhi together. This is an opportunity here to leave samsara, to get out of the prison of the mind, to free oneself from the suffering of mental existence and physical existence. You have the opportunity here, don't waste it, because this life is incredible suffering. You've all suffered enough already. Sometimes you've already sort of almost gone crazy in your mind just with the mental suffering and the despair and the problems which come up. Do you really want to keep on with that type of mind, or do you want some freedom, some liberation from it? Now, this liberation, this freedom is on offer. The happiness of the mind is there for the taking. So don't mess around and waste your time. Get in there and say, present moment awareness, as much as I can, even all the day. That should be reasonably easy to do. And that adina, or that danger, if that doesn't work, just do the third one, of like ignoring. Ignore the past, ignore the future, ignore the fantasies. Just throw them away. I just don't want to even look at you. And the past starts to knock on the door with a nice memory of something which has happened, or the future. Shut up. I'm just not interested. Take away the interest from those unwholesome objects. Take away the interest from fantasies and dreams. And where do they ever get you, those fantasies and dreams? Just wasting time, that's all. They never give you real happiness. It's just passing the time or killing time. What you're doing is killing the opportunity for happiness. So just take away the value, which is what that this third method is. Have disinterest. What value is there in it? What's in it for you? The future, or the past, or fantasies. What are you going to get out of that? Where is it going to lead you? Is that really what you want to end up being in your life? Just this old person in a nursing home, just thinking about the past, and all the things which happened, and all your memories. I remember the time when I was only 30 or 40, we had this monastery. Or just fantasizing about the old nurses in the nursing home, or whatever else people get up to in those nursing homes. Is that really where you want to end up in your life? So, see the danger and see the lack of value in those things. The only reason why we pursue a course of thinking in our mind is because we value it. The only reason why a person keeps on dwelling in the past is because they think it's important. The only reason why they go off into the future is because they've got some vested interest in that. They think it again, it's necessary. Take away the value of the past and future. Take away the value in fantasizing and dreaming. Where is that going to get you? When you find out it's going to get us nowhere, just wasting time and stopping us, hindering us from enjoying the peaceful, beautiful present moment. When we see it's valueless, it's worthlessness, then that's the way we can turn to its opposite, the present moment. Value the present moment, value the here and now. In all spiritual traditions, this is just ordinary spiritual traditions, let alone the magnificent Buddha Dhamma, here and now is important. So stop messing around and get in the present moment. And if that doesn't work, just gently, gradually, stage by stage, bring yourself into the present moment. At least let go of all of the past from yesterday onwards. Whatever happened this morning, maybe you can think about that. Whatever happened, going to happen tomorrow and further on, let go of that and just think about what you're going to do this evening. Just like narrow the confines of the mind so you can gradually come to the present moment. Now, 1 year when I was meditating by myself, that I had trouble with fantasies and with thinking. And so what I did, I made a deal with my mind. I said, okay, for 23 hours of the day, you're going to watch the breath, you're going to be in the present moment, you're not going to go thinking about this and that, but for 1 hour of the day, I said, I think it was from 3 till 4 in the afternoon, you can sit down, you can think whatever you want to think, you can dream whatever dream, think whatever fantasy, I'll let you go, you can do whatever you want. I made a deal with my mind. That was actually a skillful means of trying to restrict the mind. 23 hours of the day you can sort of meditate, the other hour you can do whatever you want. Because what actually happened when I sat down, just rested, leant against the wall of my heart, made myself comfortable, well, okay, mind, you can think of whatever you want, even sexual fantasies, whatever you want, go for it. I couldn't think of anything. It was amazing, just the stupidity of the mind. I go and think of something, I just couldn't manage it. But when I wanted to meditate on the breath, there's no way could I stay with the breath very well. And I realized just how strange this mind is. But it was a skillful means of bringing the mind slowly to the present moment, gradually, calming the sankharas bit by bit. If I remember correctly, in that sutta it said, a person is running and they say, why should I run? Why don't I walk? So they start walking. When they're walking, why should I walk? Why don't I stand? So they stop walking, they just stand. And they're standing, so why should I stand? Why don't I sit down? So they sit down. They're sitting down, why should I sit down? Why don't I lie down? Gradually, gradually, gradually come into a calm, peaceful, comfortable state. So if you have trouble with the present moment, just do it gradually. Bring yourself closer and closer. Make deals with the mind until you come closer stage by stage by stage. And when you get to the present moment, it's like lying down. It's comfortable. And as soon as you get to that present moment, and you can value it, it's fun. And the fifth way is if you really sort of find it very difficult to stay in the present moment, just grit your teeth. Make yourself stay in the present moment. Use your willpower. Each one of you is stubborn enough. Use that stubbornness. If you weren't stubborn, you would never have been able to become a monk, or a novice, or an anagarika. You've got willpower, you've got enough strength of character. So use that and say, right, no way am I going to think about the past or the future. No way am I going to fantasize. I'm going to just stay in the present moment, that's it, finished, done. These are just skillful means to achieve even just the first stage of the meditation, present moment awareness, and that shouldn't be hard. Train, 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 train until you can get there. When you get there, feel good at yourself, about yourself. Congratulate yourself. Have an extra cup of tea. Whatever it is, go and take some chocolate, whatever. Because that's positive reinforcement. You're getting somewhere. But actually, once you get into these stages of meditation, the happiness comes automatically from inside. Just being in the present moment most of the day. It's such a peaceful abiding. It's so wonderful to have let go of all of your worries and responsibilities and family and stuff like that. And you're just here in this monastery. It's so lovely just being present, carrying no burdens from the past or the future, having no family, having no possessions, no bank accounts, nothing to concern yourself or worry yourself about. Realizing that you'll be fed for the next 3 months without you lifting a finger. That you're housed and no one's going to take your hut away from you. You've got enough clothes, you've got everything you need. You don't have to do anything. Isn't that bliss? Considering the worries and concerns people have in the world. You've got 3 months of freedom from the world. It's as if you've been in a jail and you've got 3 months parole, knowing that after those 3 months you're going to have to go back inside the busy world. So take the opportunity of this. develop that present moment awareness with whatever skillful means you can find. Make it your goal, make it a commitment, give it everything you've got, and it's only a matter of time. Once you achieve it, you'll understand what I mean by the happinesses of these stages. Then so develop the silence of the mind. Shut up all this thinking, all this inner commentary. Because this thinking and inner commentary again drives you insane. Do not believe in it. I'm sick. It's too hot. It's too cold. It's too early. It's too late. It's not good enough. I shouldn't be in this hut. I should be in another hut. Not the right place for me. Maybe other monks can meditate, but not me. I'm hopeless. I can't do this. Blah, 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 blah. That sort of mind, which is thinking, 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 don't believe in that. I've had that mind before. I can't do this. I'm hopeless. And then I managed to do it, and I realized I was wrong. You can believe in those thoughts very easily. I remember very clearly some years ago, giving a talk, I think this was in the days of Magnolia Street, giving a talk in the evening and people getting sort of so restless because it was such a boring talk that sort of they were waiting for Ajahn Jacaro to come back. In those days people would ring up and they'd say, who's giving the talk that evening? And if it was Ajahn Brahm, then they wouldn't come. They'd only come for Ajahn Jacaro. And in those days, I remember giving one really terrible talk one evening and then go back to my room afterwards and thinking, well, that's it, Ajahn Brahm, just, you know, you can help Ajahn Jacaro, you can do the building and you can maybe sort of wash his robes and maybe that's all that's there for you in monastic life. You'll never be a teacher. And I really convinced myself of that at one particular point, so I can still be of service to the Sangha. And now I find I'm teaching and people are listening to what I'm saying. I just, personal experience, you just cannot believe your thoughts and your judgments, even about yourself, let alone about anything else in this world. So whatever that mind throws up with thinking, no, I can't do this, I'm hopeless, this is a terrible meditation, I'm never going to get anywhere, just shut up. Just do not believe this inner commentary. This is actually taking away its value, the third of these ways of calming the mind. You don't value thinking anymore. Instead you value silence. So that you can ignore the thoughts. You can just avoid them. You can put them aside. They're not important anymore. Please never give importance to those thoughts, except the thoughts which arise after a jhana. They're important. Because there may be some insights. But the other thoughts, they're just the idle chatter of foolish minds. Don't even give it any importance at all or any value. We all think that our thoughts are important. Take it from me, they're not. So just shut up. If the thinking doesn't, if the avoiding doesn't mind, doesn't work, try the substitution from thinking, put silence. Just look for silence. Notice silence. Substitute the silence for the thoughts. Listen to the silence outside in the world. And when you can hear the silence outside in the world, take hold of it and bring it inside your mind. And hold it in there. And once you've got that silence there, you'll understand just how beautiful is that silence. How awesome is that silence. And how freeing is that silence. You're valuing the silence. See the danger in thinking. How many times have you really almost gone crazy just through thinking, thinking, thinking? How many times have you lost sleep? Through thinking, thinking. How many times you felt really bad about yourself because of thinking, thinking, thinking? How many times you thought you were going to disrobe because of thinking, thinking, thinking? Just don't even think about that. You just can't disrobe. It's not allowed. End of story. So this is stopping that thinking. See the danger in it. Just how it drives you and drives other people crazy. The truth is never found in thinking. The only thing which you find in the thinking world is lies. sort of misinterpretations, misunderstandings, half-truths and deceit. That's what you find in thinking. Truth only arises in silence, through clear seeing. I just don't believe in that thinking. I've been thinking for many years. I don't believe a word of it. It's the silence and the beautiful, blissful, quiet states of mind. That's where I get my insight from. Not through thinking it out. So, whatever that thinking is, see its danger. And just see how much it tires the mind out. As the abbot and administrator in this monastery, I do have to think a lot. People make me think about their problems and goodness knows what else. But during the range retreat, I give that up. And I just notice just how much less I need to sleep when I stop thinking so much, when I stop working my brain. I just notice how my energies start to increase and my happiness increases. People who think a lot are miserable. People who think a little are usually happy. You ever remember those images of the village idiot? They were always happy, weren't they? They were always smiling. You know, they didn't think so much, that's why they're so happy. Now, I don't mean being an idiot, but I mean like not thinking so much. And then you sort of get a greater happiness. The silence is just so beautiful. You see so much more in that silence. The mind is far more clear. The thoughts are just like these black clouds which come across the mind. They just rain these stupid ideas down and make everything soaking. They make just this mind just really soggy. You just have soggy thoughts and soggy moods and soggy emotions. Nothing really sharp and upstanding. You're just like sloppy all over the place. You know, just like, you know, when the mud is just all wet and you slip all over the place. Or, you know, when the porridge is just too watery and it just slops all over the place. That's what your mind is like. It's got too much thinking. It's just sloppy. And sharpen up the mind by letting go of all that thinking and proliferating. And there's no reason why you can't do that. This is just seeing the danger in it. Where does it lead you? If you have the silence, it's on the way to deep meditation. The Buddha was called Santamuni, the silent sage. He wasn't a great thinker, he was a great non-thinker. That's why he was wise. If that doesn't work, just slow the thinking bit by bit, stage by stage. At the very least, only think about the meditation object. Create thoughts which are centered around what you're doing. And at least don't think of things which are none of your business. Thoughts of the past, thoughts of the future, thoughts of the monastery, thoughts about your family, thoughts about your health, thoughts about other monks. That's none of your business. Thoughts about breakfast, thoughts about lunch, thoughts about cups of tea and jars of coffee. Don't think about such things. If you're going to do this fourth method of like slowing down the mind, just start to bring the thinking in. Don't allow it to go all over the place. Instead of thinking about anything, just think about the meditation or think about the Dhamma. Only as the halfway house, and then give up all thinking altogether. And then just get to this breath. Very often if you've been doing breath meditation long enough, you just start and you just calm down, and you'll find, first of all, thoughts of all the future and the past will disappear. Then you'll find that silence will grow naturally out of that present moment awareness. And then you'll find the breath comes up to guide the mind into the deeper stages of the meditation. First of all, you just be aware of breath going in, breath going out, and just allow the mind to fill with the breath until all you've got there is just continuous awareness of the breath from the very beginning to the end. If you can't do that, then see the danger in the obstacles. Why can't you do that? find out why. See the danger in not being able to be a friend to the breath. If you can't do this, you're going to have a difficult rains retreat. Not just a difficult rains retreat, you're going to have a difficult monastic life. And if you leave the monastic life, you're going to have a difficult time altogether. There was an Anagarika recently left the monastic life. He ended up getting punched in the nightclub. Karmic result. Be careful of what you're going to do. What do you really want to do in this world? Just become enlightened and have that inner happiness, see what the Buddha saw, have these beautiful, amazing states of meditation which surpass any happiness you can ever have in the world. What do you really want? Or you just want to be just another person, having relationships, getting into trouble, having to work all your life just for a coffin 6 foot long, 2 foot wide, having arguments, breakups, having to pay for psychotherapy, all these other things which, and ending up, if you manage to survive, ending up in the nursing home, abandoned, just as a piece of abandoned rubbish which no one else wants. Is that what you really want in this life? Or do you really want something more? See the danger in not practicing samadhi. And then you can find you can actually do it. You can actually watch the breath and you can maintain awareness on the breath. And once you can settle in with the breath, you find a peaceful, happy abiding just that much. Fill the mind with the breath, just make that your goal for now. All day long, just being with the breath, going in, going out. Walking meditation, you can actually be with the movement of the feet, moving this way and that way. Just by getting that far, you're just so far on the path of meditation, the other things become easy. This is the hardest part. This is where it's actually doing the preliminary training is always the hardest. Just like playing a piano, just doing the keys, up and down, it's just so boring and monotonous. Once you keep doing that and get the facility with your fingers and get to know where all the notes are, then you find after a while you can start playing things which are fun to play. And then you're off. The meditation is fun. Once you get to the breath, the next stage of the beautiful breath, it just comes naturally. And that's when you're really enjoying the meditation. And that's when I can give some even deeper instructions, more powerful instructions on how to take that further. And how to take the ordinary awareness on the breath into very profound and wonderful states of mind, which are opening the doors on the truth of anatta and nibbana. But you can't do that unless you've got some samadhi. You can't enjoy monastic life unless you've got samadhi. You find out monks go into all sorts of other distractions. But with that attainment of a degree of samadhi, that the monastic life becomes fun. You've got something to be able to talk to others about, and you are an authority then on Buddhism. You have the experience. Authorities on Buddhism, people who can teach, are not people who just learnt from the suttas. They're not just people who've lived so many years in a monastery. They're people who've experienced those beautiful states of mind or beautiful insights of Buddhism. People can talk for hours and hours about anatta, but if they haven't achieved any degree of samadhi, they don't know what anatta is. They can talk about attachments and cravings, but if they haven't let go of something, they just haven't got a clue what those words mean. They can argue whether a jhana is important or not important, but if they haven't experienced those things, they just literally don't know what they're talking about. Achieving these stages at least is going to make you an authority. You're going to understand what the Buddha was talking about. So get in there and achieve these stages. They're fun, they're inspiring, they're conducive to enlightenment, they give beautiful insight, they're what this monastery is all about. Each one of you, every one of you in this monastery, without exception, excepting Kit Kat and Mit Kat that is, every human being in this monastery has the ability. You have to develop the inclination to want to do it. You have to put forth the effort. You have to follow the instructions. And if you follow these instructions and put forth the effort, these things will happen. And happiness will be yours. And then I will be happy as well. Whatever I've done for any one of you, the only way that burden, that sort of debt, sorry, can be repaid is by achieving those states. As you said on Monday night, Ajitagitani Tero Maihang Baro Ahampi Terasa Baro, from now on, the Tera is my burden, and I am the Tera's burden. And you are burdensome to me until such time as you get into deep meditation. And then you're not burdened to me anymore, then you're a great inspiration. Not only an inspiration to me, you're an inspiration to the lay people who feed you. You're not a burden on them anymore. You're an inspiration to your parents who brought you up, because you're someone who's actually done something with their life. You're an inspiration to all those other people you would meet in life. All the other people who are Buddhists and not Buddhists, the Buddhists will gain greater inspiration to know that there are monks in this world who can achieve jhanas and have got insight, who are Aryas. And you give great inspiration to people who are not yet Buddhists. You create more Buddhists in this world. You'll be showing people the path, not because of your scholarship, but because of your experience. It's amazing just to see how experience is just so much more powerful than scholarship in inspiring other people. So this is what you can do for the world, let alone what you can do for yourself. So motivate yourself. You've got 3 months, you can't go anywhere, you can't do anything else. You're stuck, so make the most of it. Certainly in my life, as I was saying to someone at lunchtime, early on in my life as a monk, I knew I was committed to this path. Even only after a couple of weeks as a monk, I realized I would never disrobe. I'd said that to other people, and they thought I was crazy. They said, yeah, I know of other monks who said that, and 1 or 2 weeks later they disrobe. I told people I wouldn't disrobe, but I haven't and I won't. There's something inside me which was very clearly known that this was my lifestyle. And having made that sort of 100% commitment, the next thing was to say, well, if I'm going to be a monk, I might as well be a good monk. I might as well create happiness for myself as a monk. And that was the path of meditation for me. And the path of sila, of keeping my precepts very perfectly, because I was told that was a way of happiness, and it was. Now, restraining my mind, said that was a path of happiness, and it is. And developing deep meditations, that's the way of the Buddhas, and it was. So these are the things which, having had that commitment, right, I'm going to stay here, I'm going to do it, you manage to do these things. It's like once I remember just travelling for all day long in the north of Thailand, and it was a hot season, and I was walking all morning and then waiting for a bus, and then cramped in this bus for many hours until I got to this monastery. And it was, how was it? The name escapes me, it'll come back in a moment. In the north of Thailand. And just as I got out of the bus and walked into this monastery, there was 2 monks who met me. And they said, you're just in time, in about 50 minutes or half an hour, we start our evening meeting. Just got enough time to take a shower or whatever. And they said, in the evening we meet at 6 o'clock and we sit meditation for 4 hours. And I thought, oh my God, how am I going to do this? I was just so tired, so hot, no rest all day, just been travelling. Those people who know the hot season in Thailand, it's extremely hot and you get tired, you sweat, your robes are all sticky or soaking. What am I going to do? How am I going to sit for 4 hours after that? I realize, okay, you're going to have to sit for 4 hours, you've got no choice, just do it properly. In all situations like that, I really appreciate being put in a corner where I had no escape. I realized if I didn't do my meditation properly, it would be just so much suffering. So instead of just allowing the mind to wander off, I just put my mind straight on the breath, present moment awareness, silence, stay with the breath, and had a lovely meditation. I remember that occasion because they rang the bell at 9:45. It was 15 minutes early and I told them off. I said, why do you ring the bell so early? I was enjoying myself. It could have gone on much longer. This is what happens when you can get into deep meditation. You have fun. You enjoy yourself. Whether it's 4 hours or 6 hours or whatever hours, even if you've been travelling all day and you feel tired, you feel sick, you feel sweaty, it's amazing what you can do with samadhi power. So this is the encouragement for you. In previous raised retreats, monks have achieved jhanas. Usually only one or two. This year I want more than one or two, please. Please make this as a gift for me, let alone a gift for you. See just how many of you can follow the practice, do it properly, and get into real juicy jhanas for this retreat. I've given so much instruction, you've heard so much, you know enough already. Just please don't waste time, put forth energy. See the dangers in not putting forth energy. Avoid all of the unwholesome things, which you know are unwholesome. Don't waste your time with them. Train the mind, and you'll find the beautiful benefits and joys of monastic life. It's there for you. So all I can do is just encourage and advise. Really, now it's up to you. So please, really make the most of this rage retreat with all these wonderful conditions. Okay, that ends this little awada for this evening.
Sukhati Kano Bhagavato Sahaja.